Welcome, everybody, to another edition, or the first edition, of Nerd Watch Nights, or Todd's Mail Sack.
Nerd Watch Magnum.
Nerd Watch Magnum.
Nerd Watch Magnum.
We don't know what we're going to call it, so here's what we're going to do.
We're
going to give it to you guys. What do you guys think we should call this? It's a secondary podcast.
I'm going to create all kinds of Facebook accounts. Yeah.
So far,
Nerdwatch Magnum.
So far, we've got Mail Sack.
We got Todd's Mail Sack. Nerdwatch presents.
Right. Apparently, it all comes out of emails from Todd.
That's right. So this second half is Nerdwatch presents Todd's Mail Sack, or
email doesn't come in a sack.
I'm starting to like
you're
Nerd
doing
Watch
it
wrong. Or Nerd Watch Magnum, courtesy of Alika.
That's where my vote is.
Nerd Watch Nights is from myself. We had Nerd Watch After Hours or Nerd Watch After Dark. But you
that's
guys decide.
The Spice Channel.
Yeah. You
Nerd
let us know.
Watch Skinamax.
By the way, I am joined by, of course, Todd Bernardi, the one and only Swan, Alika, Format, and of course, Gannon. And Gannon, why are you using an iPhone?
Bernardi.
Huh?
Why are you using an iPhone?
Because my V10 gave up the ghost.
That soon?
Are you guys anti-iPhone?
What the heck, man? I tell you what, I don't like my iPhone.
I didn't think the Apple versus Mac debate still existed.
I don't. Well, Apple versus Mac, they're the same.
I mean, I'm sorry.
They're the same.
Man, you stupid.
I'm rooting for Apple.
Yeah, I'm...
You just got Gilmore.
That sucks. That your V10 crapped out so fast.
Well, it's under warranty. So
oh, that's good.
Are we really going to talk about my
phone? What are you getting? Are you going to get the one with
no,
the...
No, I'm getting my V10 back.
Oh, you're getting it back? Oh,
yeah,
I thought you'd get
yeah,
the
you
one...
You didn't hear?
You didn't want to get the one...
Todd wrote about your phone issues in his email.
You didn't want to get...
It's a three-page diatribe on my phone.
You didn't want to get...
Well, there was... Well, because you'd had a lot of pictures of my mail sack.
That's right.
You
didn't want to get the one with the exploding battery in it? No.
That's the Note 7.
Oh, is that the one?
So
okay.
far, it's only the Korean model.
Is it guaranteed to explode?
There's been
a lot
two.
Of them
it's
have been.
It's
yeah.
been only off the chain
yeah.
for
they
about
actually,
a week.
They actually went and
they're
they
doing a worldwide report. Recall. It's pretty crazy.
Well, they don't want to blow people's heads up like scanners.
Yeah.
You can just get replacement. It's a faulty battery.
All right. You know what I just realized? Here's what we didn't do. This second podcast is devoted to... Random conversations about things that deal with nerd culture. We don't necessarily have a point like the Nerd Watch where we talk about movies and games and all that stuff. This is kind of like a, listen.
Our focus gets less focused.
Yes, our focus gets less focused here on Nerd Watch Nights.
That's Jackie Chan.
Or Nerd Watch presents Todd's Mail Sack. Or Nerd Watch Magnum. Or Nerd Watch After Dark.
It'll always be Nerd Watch.
Why don't we just let people vote?
That's what I'm saying. We should...
Nerd Watch Max.
My idea was Nerd Watch Men.
Nerd Watch what?
Nerd Watch Men.
Nerd Watch Men. Ooh.
Yeah.
Like a
that's
comic
nice. Book.
I thought those were two separate words. Nerd Watch Men.
Like we
Nerd
watch.
Watchmen.
Car Ramrod.
That's it! Nerd Watch Men? Question
so
mark.
We show up and do the pod with blue dongs.
who watches the Nerd Watch?
Who watches no the Nerd Watch? I like it. Nerd Watch men?
Oh, okay.
All right, good.
It's my mail sack that's scaring everybody away. It's not the blue dong.
Okay, good.
It's the blue mail sack.
The blue dog is the watch.
Todd's blue mail sack. That's the name of this pod.
Well, here's what we haven't had a chance to talk about in the first half of the show.
I actually have to apologize for that because Todd's blue mail sack sounds bad. Now that I think about it.
It's like, man, you should go see a doctor.
Yeah. Well, here's what we want to talk about.
Tell your wife sorry.
Todd.
Once
again, good old Todd is...
I have to tell her that all
good
so
old,
how's about that email?
Yeah. Good old Todd is graced us with some interesting conversations that we can have on this show for the next 45 to 50 minutes.
Good old blue mail sack.
Yeah. Todd emailed me again this week. By the way, you may all get a little more traction on subjects you'd like to speak about if you email me, because Todd is the only guy that does. So I just thought I'd throw it out there.
I use send that a, podcast send... that you made
yeah, I know, right?
for the same reason. But, you know, if I'd have known that we were just emailing you, I guess we'd do that.
Right.
Yeah.
I made a Facebook group, but, you know, it's Todd's personal touch of emailing.
Well, I don't want to compete with
anybody.
So
I'm going to send you, like, a snail mail thing.
No, but mail it tonight. Write it right here.
And put like the wax seal on the back.
There's a mailbox right outside in front of Amigos. So
you're
good.
I use it quite often.
Well, here's one of the cool things about what Todd emailed me about. First of all, it has to deal with comic books. Secondly, it also has to deal with a very special birthday that happens once a year.
Happy birthday, Format. We're talking about you.
It is one of the all-time comic book legends' birthdays, and that's Mr. Jack Kirby. It's his birthday, and
it was his birthday, August 27th.
Okay, there you go. And now, what's interesting is that, of course, that
2 weeks ago.
So, of course,
this is a week ago.
Of course, Jack Kirby's work is what influences all the Comic Cons around the country.
Kirby Dots.
Kirby Crackle.
And of course, that's also why we're doing a Maui Comic Con this November, courtesy of Maui Comics and Collectibles.
It's called Maui Comic. Kirby Comic Con. Maui Kirby Comic Con.
Just Maui Comic
Con. Oh, it's not? Comic-Con, you say, yeah. Okay.
We don't want to get sued by the Kirby estate.
I haven't seen the logo yet. So
that would be really cool.
My blue mail sack is in the logo.
You know, we could have a mascot. We could have a Kirby mascot. So the Maui Comic Con. Possible.
Or would it be Nintendo's Kirby?
Nice touch there.
It could be that, because it sucks and
blows. On the topic of Jack Kirby's birthday, like, I've seen him in different mediums, people paying tribute to him or homage or whatever, and it brought to mind one of my favorite episodes of the Ninja Turtles from one of my least favorite runs of it, the 2003 series. They had an episode where Jack Kirby, they just called him Kirby. And he lives in the basement, and Donatello finds him, and he has like a pencil with like a magical crystal on it, and everything he draws comes to life. And then Kirby drew this interdimensional gate or door, and they go into this universe where everything is in like Kirby style. But it's a Ninja Turtles episode, so it's like the meeting of two amazing things in my life.
Wow, well, it's interesting. Can I
seen that episode?
Can I ask you something?
No.
Why?
That's cartoon. Came
I'm
out
sorry.
13 years
let
ago.
Me be more specific. Can I ask you something?
Get on it, guys.
Alika.
Check it out. What's up?
You've always talked about your love for the turtles. What is it about the turtles that you love so much? You reference the turtles a lot.
Turtle power.
They're green.
Is that what it is?
They're mean.
Interesting. I was curious.
What's not to love about?
There are
like,
other things
are
they
you
say in the theme song.
No, I'm just kind of curious. What you reference the turtles a lot, so I was kind of curious why the turtles out of.
I'm obsessed.
You are. That's why I want to know about it.
I don't know. What do you want me to say?
It's
like
a fanatic.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, it's like
it's okay.
You know the kids who were like amped up on Ninja Turtles in the late mid or whatever 80s, and I was that kid, and now I just never snapped out of it. Mm-hmm. I could probably sue for damages.
He was also. Are you a fan now?
Of course, yeah.
True.
Yeah.
So this is not pre or post layered. You don't have any of that dangling over your head.
No, but I mean, everybody knows the best stuff was when Peter and Kevin were. Yeah, and that's like the bulk of the universe, anyways. Like all the good stuff, but the new run has a lot of original characters and new storylines that are. Really, really good too.
Let's not mention Alika was in that Turtle Power documentary. He was that kid when they came out to tell everyone the tickets were sold out. He'll be kicking his friend on the ground.
But even Kevin Eastman, bringing it back to Jack Kirby, I mean, that's one of his like number one main influences.
Oh yeah,
I think I missed it with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles because I went to go see the movie in 1990, and they were sold out.
Good
the first weekend, so I had to go see Joe versus the Volcano.
Ooh. I saw that in the theater, too.
You know what's funny is that there were so many interesting...
That's why I moved him out.
What's cool about it is there are so many interesting comic book elements in Joe versus the Volcano.
Yeah, it's funny. Like,
it's like... Cloud. It just never really came to fruition. And whenever
You know, as a kid, I watched it. And for it to have the attention of a kid, I know a lot of people my age who are watching it at that time. I mean, that says something for just a boring movie about a guy who hates his job.
Yeah. I was always impressed. Getting back to the Turtles, which we'll get back to Kirby, but the Turtles movie—it's so weird that the Turtles movie, the very first one, was so good, and for some reason the budgets got bigger with every subsequent sequel, but yet The turtles got worse.
The quality got worse.
It's weird.
Well, wasn't the second movie rush production?
Yeah, they were just like, let's hit the jackpot before this thing wears off.
I guess. It just got really bad. And then it got, the third one was just horrible. It was just like,
the story was all right.
The story was great, but
the costumes were terrible.
It was the clicking and clacking of their teeth the whole time. It's just like, oh, it just was.
You could like see the actors in
the I think a lot of it, I mean, the first.
You can at the perfectly lighted scene you can.
Oh, it's horrible.
Well, the first movie was the comic. I mean, it was based on
Exactly. It's like all the Earthbound stuff, because by issue 5, they're already in outer space. But anything that occurred between the Foot Clan and Splinter and Shredder and all
that. So for the second and third movies, they didn't have a big enough budget or the special effects to do what they had done past issue 5.
Yeah.
So I think that they had to write kind of their own scripts and kind of come up with their own story based on what the budget was.
That's true, but then why not just stick with the original costumes, which is weird. Like, well, I mean,
like,
why
did they have to turn him into Jim Henson? And then he's like, you guys make a crappier version of this.
Well, it was
their liver spots got more bigger and pronounced. Yeah, so weird. The eye holes underneath the masks got bigger.
It was Jim Henson's son that was the, like, head.
Brian, right?
Yeah.
Brian Henson. Is that his name?
But Jim Henson was alive during the first movie.
Yes, he was.
And he oversaw a lot of it.
He died 2 weeks.
He actually objected to the Ninja Turtles movie.
Yeah, so he had an active role in the movie, though.
He didn't like it because there was too much
the violence. Yeah. And that was a big deal when I was a kid. Like, parents were wondering if they were going to let us go see it or not.
It's so weird because I never thought that the turtles were violent. I always thought they always...
I never thought they were violent either. Like, the time Leonardo cuts that foot soldier with his sword, I never thought that was very violent at all.
No, but whenever
Donatello shoves his bow staff in some guy's head with his nunchuck.
Listen, don't.
I never thought any of that was violent at all.
Don't try and make a cogent point, okay?
Or
stop.
When Casey Jones smashes that dude in the face with his hockey stick, that didn't come across as violent at all to me.
It almost felt slapsticky, not violent.
You and I watch very different movies.
Wait a minute. So that would mean that Home Alone is a very violent movie.
It is.
But it's slapstick. That would mean that the Three Stooges.
It's played for laughs, but you know what? It's
only
very violent.
Is the music. You put the music a little more serious and you watch it.
If you put the music to the Saw series of a Home Alone movie, it's an entirely different movie.
That's pretty awesome.
And who was the one that died of brain damage? Larry Curly?
I think it was Curly. I think Curly, at the very end, I think it was Curly that was having an issue with his with his cranium, I think. I mean, like I said, don't quote me on that. I'm not sure.
Cranium. So slapstick actually is very violent, and somebody died from it.
No, the reason why he left from... No, it wasn't because of that. The reason why he left, Curly left, was because he just felt like he could never be taken seriously. Like, everything was him being Curly. That's why he had to finally get out of that. It wasn't something that he wanted to...
And then we got Joe.
And then, we got Joe Derita. Yeah, Or we got Joe Besser. Oh.
That's who you guys are going to replace.
Joe Besser was the one that had the feminine quality about him.
Well, hopefully we'll luck out and get a Shep.
Yeah. Shemp was awesome.
Yeah.
Shemp was awesome. By the way, you do have kind of Shemp... Well, no, you don't have Shempy hair.
Apparently he looks like everybody.
Shemp?
No, I'm talking about Todd.
Todd looks like
everybody. He looks like Shemp. He looks like Michael McDonald. Mm-hmm.
George Lucas.
Lucas. Lucas, it's spot on.
Baby Lucas.
Lucas
he looks
and
like
McDonald.
My honey pie.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Who?
You look like my honey pie.
So
Rainbow Dash?
Yeah.
When we were talking about Kirby.
Yes.
His birthday. It was because.
It's weird that Todd kind of looks like him. I don't know.
It was because.
Kirby, it's the eyebrows.
You wish it looked like Jack Kirby.
Bushy
it's because you wanted to talk about creators, right?
Yes.
Right. So let's get back.
Since we're trying to stay on somewhat of a course here, Jack Kirby, give us the reason why you wanted to talk about Jack Kirby. Number one, and number two, how does this deal with comic book creators today, Sir McDonald?
So
you have to sing it.
Today?
We already established I do a terrible impersonation.
Yes, you do.
Wow. Jack Kirby had to sue Marvel eventually because he didn't like the way that he was being treated. He didn't like
Off. That's where let's kind of give a little bit of a backstory. That's where Jack Kirby was started.
Yeah, Jack Kirby started. Well, Jack Kirby started at Timely Comics.
Right. No, what I'm saying is that
his big character at Timely Comics was Captain America, and he drew Captain America punching Hitler right in the face.
Right in the face.
Before the United States was even in World War II.
Right in his punim.
And he was Jewish, and he had a lot of family in Europe, and he was very worried about them and worried about the situation that was happening in Europe. And he thought that at some point the U.S. was going to get dragged in that conflict, and he needed and he wanted to try to promote the American industrial spirit. And he wanted to try to get people motivated to stand up against that kind of tyrant.
Tyranny.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so they were – and it was also a reaction to the success of Superman. So, you know, you've already got Superman, and Captain America is Marvel's answer to Superman. And then afterwards, he did, he did a ton of comic books for Timely, and then afterwards he did a ton of comic books for, he did a ton of pages for X-Men, and he worked for probably over 30 years in the industry. And then he decided that the wage and the creative control that he was getting wasn't adequate.
Right. You're saying that he gave up too much control to the publisher.
Well, he didn't really have a choice.
Of course.
Because the way that they paid him. He was paid as a freelancer, and he was the way that they pay their freelancers back in the day, pre-1970, before they changed the copyright laws, was that if you signed the back of your check, you were signing away the rights and artwork away by cashing that check. So they had a little thing on the back of the check that said, by cashing this, you renounce all your rights to your work.
Interesting. Okay.
And so there's this phenomenon pre-1970 called the work for hire, when a lot of these comic books, like The Hulk and like Thor, and Steve Ditko is another case, like Spider-Man.
You mean like independent contractor stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so they signed away their control by cashing these checks, and they weren't even being paid that much. And then on the back end, Marvel was taking it and licensing it to animation studios and toy companies, and they're making fistfuls of cash on top of the comic books with these characters that Jack Kirby was creating and designing and making popular. In pre-1970, you know, from 1939 to 1970, early 1970s, they were comic books was it. That was your cartoon. That was your television show. That they didn't, you know, the people that couldn't access, that didn't have a television set in their home, that didn't go to the movies that often, you know, that was their entertainment.
Sure.
And so they really promoted the character that way. And then people were, and then they were licensing the character. So they were making a ton of money doing this.
Right.
And then Jack finally said, like, well, you guys are making a lot of money on, and I think that there was also his relationship with Stan Lee was getting pretty strained at this point, too. Because Stan would say, I really want this character to do this. And then Jack would come in with a fully drawn story with a suggested dialogue for everything. And basically would write, draw, and ink the entire story. He'd plot everything, but then he wouldn't get very much credit. They would say, well, he's a penciler, and he inked it, he did the art. But they wouldn't say that he was a co-creator.
Right. So who does that – so getting everybody involved in this interesting conversation – Who does the fault lie with? Does the fault lie with the guy who is cashing the check and doing the work and saying that he resigns his rights in that check, yeah, or is it the publisher? Because they're
what happened with the legal situation changed because the United States federal government changed the copyright law in the early 1970s.
Right.
And so afterwards, Marvel and DC found out that they were kind of like, basically, what they were doing was illegal.
Right.
And they couldn't do it anymore, so they sent a one-page contract to all the artists to sign so that they would
relinquish all their past and future rights.
Yeah. And so Jack wouldn't sign it. And right about 1970 or a little bit later, he decided to stop working for Marvel. And then worked for DC through the 70s and then did a lot of independent work. And then also did a lot of concept art. Like, he designed Thundar the Barbarian and that kind of
thing. They just recently released in Heavy Metal one of his older stories that he did with a freelance writer, The Lord of Light, mm-hmm. which was pretty interesting looking. You can see it was that time, kind of time period in like the early 80s when he was working on like after the New Gods and stuff like that. But you can see a lot of stuff that maybe didn't make it into those books.
The Lord of Light stuff was what he did for Argo. You
know, it was released previously?
Well, no, the Lord of Light was the name of the movie that the people that were trying to free the captives, the CIA. That was
really?
Jack Kirby designed the artwork for that fake movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they talk about that in the movie?
They talk about that in the movie, and they talk about it in the Heavy Metal issue too.
Oh, wow.
That the Lord of Light stuff was actually for... It was supposed to be this type of like Star Wars type movie, and they said that it fell through, but really it was just a CIA...
Yeah, just a cover to get in there.
Yeah.
Interesting. So,
just a reason to make a Ben Affleck movie.
Well, what's funny is that it takes progress to happen in order for things to change. So, of course, that there are some like Jack Kirby who probably got kicked in the teeth by things like this.
Or Siegel and Shuster.
Siegel and Shuster, they got kicked in the teeth.
Or
Ditko.
There's...
You know, so I mean, those.
Bill Finger.
Yeah, those.
Yeah, the Bill Finger and the Jerry Robinson Bill Finger thing is contentious because Bill Finger thinks that he created Joker. Jerry Robinson.
I was
going to
say Jerry Robinson gets credit on Joker mostly. Yeah.
Right now, of course,
I've seen an interview with Stan Lee saying that he created Mjolnir. And he's like, well, or maybe my brother came up with it, and that was just one of those funny words, and that they just, you know, decided to make. And I'm like, dude, that's from mythology. Like, that's actually from Nordic mythology. That's in the prose and the poetic Edda. Like, nobody made that up except for some Vikings about 5,000
years ago. He's just used to taking credit, is what you're saying.
Yeah. You know, Jack Kirby took credit for Spider-Man. I heard an interview recently in 1990 where Jack Kirby took credit for Spider-Man, and Jack Kirby wrote and drew 12 pages of Spider-Man and then got kicked off of it by Stan Lee. They're like, we're not going to publish this. I'm going to give it to Ditko. And then Ditko came in and did the rest of the pages.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Sorry.
All right, so hang on a second. So does that mean that if we were to ask now in the popularity that Marvel is at this point, and Stan Lee holding the... chairman emeritus, which is basically a nothing title, just a sign of respect. Would that make Stan Lee kind of a turncoat among his peers?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Jack Kirby, for the last 34 years of his life, said that he created the Fantastic Four. He said that he wrote it, he plotted it, he drew it, he inked it, he gave all of the dialogue suggestions. And then Stan went in and basically rewrote his dialogue suggestions for Fantastic Four #1. And then Stan Lee was like, no, it was my idea to do a thing about a team, about a bunch of different types of people that end up going out and getting affected by this, you know...
Cosmic radiation.
It's interesting. I mean, we're sitting here doing something that, you know, a lot of comic books... centered podcasts don't do. We're kind of crapping on the good name of Stan Lee and all
Stan
of the
Almighty.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you just got to tell it like it is. I mean, he did great things for the comic industry. Yeah. He's a showman and everything, but it's just certain things that happen between him and the business side of things that are just undeniable. You can't.
No, he created the brand and he created the interests. You know, he got people.
He kind of
really,
created that whole back of the house vibe too. Yeah. That kind of got
the
like,
Marvel bullpen,
the bullpen, and everything, and
the merry marching Marvel.
So is it wrong that Stan Lee wanted to play ball and the other guys didn't?
Well, what happened with Stan Lee was he was hired as head writer and editor in chief, So as head writer, he had his toes and fingers in a lot of different pies.
He was in other meetings that Jack Kirby would not have been in.
Man, I had wished we had brought this up when Joel Rubenstein was sitting here. I would have loved to have talked about that.
Well, yeah. We can hear what Steve Lealoha has to say about it at the con.
Oh, that would be cool, too. I never thought about that.
He's been there since the Bronze Age, so he's been there. And speaking of the Bronze Age and all this terrible stuff that happens to creators and writers and of characters, then you got to bring up the comic book legal defense fund that was started by Neil Adams in the 70s.
Right.
Yeah.
When, you know, he's an iconic creator, and of course he's working on already created properties. But even his art, like, he found that he couldn't keep any of his art, which is, like, that's a lot of money. Even back then, it wasn't that much money, but people had the foresight to know that by the 70s, comics were so revered.
I don't think but here's the thing, and you guys can maybe speak to this. When you work for somebody, it's not uncommon for them to say, okay, you know, whatever you like even jobs now. I remember working for a couple of companies that would say that had nothing to do with creating anything. Right. No. But they would say that it's about selling something. But if you come up with an idea and they use your idea, you lose out on the idea, or you don't get credit for the idea because it now belongs to the company because you did it under the company banner. So it's nothing new. I mean,
no, but it didn't happen in comic books. It didn't happen in comic strips. The guys that got the guy that Prince Valiant, Milton Caniff, he was really upset about the way that the syndicate was handling Terry and the Pirates. So he went off and created something else and made sure to keep his copyright.
Right.
And it made him a million.
Okay, so does that mean that we should be looking and maybe this is where Bernardi's disdain for Marvel comes from, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it does.
Okay. Do we hold that against...
And it's a disdain for DC, too.
Right, but do we hold... That's what I was about to say. Do we hold that against them?
I was going to say, I don't think any company is innocent.
No, but that's what I'm saying.
Everybody's got their thing.
Do we hold those things against them now? I mean, like, let's put it this way. Stan Lee technically doesn't work for Marvel. He's just a figurehead. Do we hold that against him? I mean, after all of these years, still?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that he's – I mean, he's always said that I worked with really, really gifted artists. And he's always tried to give a lot of credit to his collaborators and to his credit. But you will never say that he didn't create Spider-Man. And a lot of people are saying that he didn't create Spider-Man. You know, there are people – Steve Ditko has said that, like, you know, he did the same thing with Jack Kirby. It was the same kind of thing. Like, Steve Ditko would come in with the whole thing plotted with dialogue suggestions, and then the guys would just basically letter it, and then Stan Lee would kind of sign his name off on it as head writer and then edit it and then send it off to the printer.
Interesting.
And Stan Lee always says, it's because I was so busy because I was trying to write 15 books a month. And – that could be true, but give the other guys some credit. Give them some control. Let them have a piece of the pie. Let them have a bigger piece of the pie. I mean, they were making tons of money. And then on top of it, Ditko never made any money off those Spider-Man movies. He's never made any money off of the Spider-Man merchandise ancillary to the comic books. He gets a byline and he gets some royalties because of the Spider-Man comic. And I think maybe also the movies and the...
You know, but something about that doesn't feel right, but you have to kind of delve deeper into the what is ownership and creatorship and stuff like that. Like, you know, we weren't in that room. We don't know exactly who did everything.
Well, so and that's the whole thing is like, oh, these guys work for hire, you know? These guys...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's how they excused it.
That's how they excused it.
Obviously, they did a lot more than just that, but...
Yeah, they're like, well, they created this... But the thing is, the idea when they created it was like, I just need to, you know, make money. I need to get some groceries. I need to provide for my family. And comic books were not collectible in the 30s and 40s. They weren't collectible even into the 60s.
Right. Was what I wanted to ask you next. Yeah. I want to ask all of you guys this. In those days, there was no way that this, what we currently have, could ever have been imagined. None. right?
Well,
so let's put it this way.
I'm going to give credit right now to a bunch of the collectors in the early days of collecting, that there are people who
were
comic collectors and very diehard. I mean, the first Comic-Con was the San Diego Comic-Con was in 1977.
Right.
There had to have been years and years, and I know for a fact there are circles of collectors that go back to the Silver Age and go back to the Golden Age.
No, but what I'm saying is that there was no way, if we think about it, Marvel, who's a publisher,
well,
right?
I'm saying those people who were very rabidly fanatic about it did have the foresight. The first person to pay over $100 for a back issue of a comic,
right,
that person had foresight.
Right.
That person did see this stuff coming.
But in the 30s and in the 40s and in
my
the 50s.
My mentor, Bruce Ellsworth, who sold, was the first person to sell a Superman comic for over five figures and was featured on CNN in 1984.
Right.
Like, those kind of people knew that this is where it was going.
But what I'm saying is, though, back in those days when they were working on – they were working in pennies and they were – and publishers were producing these comics – that weren't necessarily flying off the shelves, per se, for all of the ink that it took, for all the paper that it took, for all the printing that it took, how are they going to get paid? You understand what I'm saying?
Something about that doesn't jive because that was the primary form of entertainment for kids and young adults.
And it was,
they printed comics in the millions and hundreds of thousands.
And
will never be printed in that.
And a lot
again.
Of those publishers had stakes with, they were just like, I want to get somebody to buy an advertisement for a toy. How do I do that? Well, I'm going to take all of these Sunday strips and I'm going to collect them.
Talking back in the Max Gaines or like the pulp days, but when they first created what is a comic book,
right? So
they're just trying to drive ad revenue for publishers and
exactly all those early publishers had stakes in all of the advertisements that were running in the back of, like they were also toy companies,
yeah.
So they were trying to sell whistles and stuff to kids, and they're like, how are we going to get. Like, they were like, man, it costs too much to advertise with these other magazines. How can we get kids to read this stuff and read the ads? And that's what happened. I think that that drove sort of this idea for new material for comic books.
Right.
So they were like, well, we're running out of strips. We need new material. And they were just like, we just need we need something for our ads because we own the ads. And we can pay these guys
right,
very cheap.
And that's what I'm saying is like let's I mean
I get what you're saying is like the thesis is that these guys never thought that it was anything other than a disposable piece of
rag
paper.
Right, and then the thing is that the publisher would go and say, hey, listen, if you look at it, if we look at it that way, it wouldn't be a two-pronged process of getting the writers okay and the creators okay, and then the publisher.
Yeah.
The thing is that if that were the case back in those days, or even in the 70s, like we're talking about here, we would never get a lunchbox or an action figure or a playset or anything like. None of these things would have ever come to fruition none of these things would have happened if there was that process, in my opinion. I don't think that these things that we relate to ever would have really been a thing. And that is where I think that's where they knew that the appeal was going to be with these kids was them buying stuff other than the comic. They wanted to buy more than just comics.
That's obvious.
Right.
Because we are children of the 80s. We're like especially – a proof to that rule, because in 1982 or 3,
yes,
a law was repealed that was created in the 60s that strictly forbid, to have like a half an hour broadcast without any substantive things aimed at or directed at children. Basically saying you couldn't make a commercial or anything that was, you know, longer than a commercial or not stated that it was a commercial. And then that year we got Transformers in America.
Yeah.
And Transformers would have been illegal the year before.
Commerce!
Format and Ganon are still here. They heard Transformers. Yeah!
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's just proof to
Michael
the rule.
Michael Bay.
You got to make it financially viable to, you know, for it to perpetuate itself.
Right. Absolutely. And I will admit this. There is no reason why when Marvel would make money and they would be able to turn a profit with other things other than the comic that they wouldn't go back to the creator and go, hey, listen, I know you're giving up all the rights to this, but here is some more money. or here's your cut of what we made off of this. I understand that completely. And I think that a lot of that has changed, especially with the birth of Image. And independent comic. I think now, and this is so funny, in the age of the internet that we live, anything is possible for anybody. Anybody can make their own movie. Anybody can make their own music. Anybody can make their own comic. You know, it's not like it wasn't Siegel and Schuster, you know, in their bedroom just coming up with an idea on a piece of paper with a pencil and then writing a story and then trying to find somebody to, you know, to publish it.
It still kind of goes that way too.
It does, but I mean the fact that the internet and social media exists becomes a different.
Now you have to if you want to get distributed by Diamond, you have to get a certain number of.
You got to sell a certain amount of copies.
Yeah.
Right.
And so there's still people trying to get on that bandwagon.
The irony is, last week Tuesday, me, Format, and Todd were all talking about the Hawaii Comic Book Alliance starting their own little Image platform, which would be an interesting concept. Creators still own their creations and would be paid in it as such. Yeah. But you did bring up an interesting point. Everything would change once money starts trading hands.
No, yeah.
So, I mean,
it happened with Image too.
Right. So, I mean, for as much as, and please forgive me for saying this, for as much as we believe publishers and things of that are dicks, they really do take they take quite a hard stance on these things, but I mean, it would happen to anybody in the first place. I think
Barton Goodman, who started Timely Comics, was just a capitalist, and he wasn't an artist, and he was really interested in kind of exploiting the advertising revenue and the toys that were being advertised in the back of these comics. Like, really, he wanted more people buying something that he already owned. And he also owned some pulp publishers too, and he was making a decent wage on that. And I think that really what he was trying to do was just – he was a businessman trying to get more people buying inexpensive entertainment.
Can anybody tell me how much money comic books profited from those damn X-ray glasses that were in the back of every single comic book?
1,000%.
$5.
I'm telling you right now, every time I would look in the back of a comic, there would be that list of super cool stuff that you could buy. And I always thought the X-ray glasses are always my favorite because I always thought they were real.
How many muscle-bound dudes in the 70s owed their physique to those ads?
Oh, man, I tell you. You know, remember?
It's a funny thing. I was a skinny little wimp, and then I saw this ad.
That's right. And then the X-ray glasses. You could see through anything, and it's like, oh, I can't. I gotta get those glasses, and like, it's like so ridiculous.
The
X-ray specs.
That was advertising a D-bag in there one time. It was a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Apparently, there was a printing of it.
Yeah, that's in the '90s.
No, interesting.
They put that in there.
They would reprint like old 1800. Like they were reprinting ads that were consistent with the era in which those characters lived,
right?
As kind of a joke, mm-hmm. And yeah, there were weird medicinal treatments from like the 1860s.
It was a douchebag.
So let's put it this way:
I wasn't going to say douche, but now that you brought it up, I'm glad. Can we say douche?
Yeah, we can.
Okay.
My question is this:
addicted.
the practice that you're speaking of so negatively, and the gray cloud that you're putting over the head of Stan Lee, still does exist at Marvel and DC today, does it not?
Yeah, well, and that's the point that I would love to make with most casual comic book readers is that like comics are not fun, and you should think about what you're buying.
That's exactly what I get every time you talk. I'm like, Todd is sucking the joy out of what I love.
Yeah. No, that's not what I'm trying to say.
Surprised you don't hang out the front door and wave a sign. Are you going in to buy comics? Please stop and think about what you're doing.
I can see Todd hanging out in the bench going, why are you coming here?
Yeah.
Steve Ditko died in poverty for your Spider-Man.
For your Spider-Man. I hope you enjoy it.
Wally Wood shot himself in poverty because of you.
That's hilarious.
Wally Wood, amazing artist.
Anyway, Todd, please make your point.
Wally Wood, sort of an alcoholic, but also a diabetic, and ended up losing his eyesight and eventually committed suicide.
Good Lord.
And there's a lot of the initiative, the hero initiative that Alika had brought up earlier for comic book artists was because that not only did they spend their lives trying to contribute joy to other people's,
and they had to live in such miserable conditions.
They had to live in such miserable conditions.
Nobody cared about them. Like,
that's right.
Well, because one of the main driving cases was the Siegel and Schuster case. Like, they had both died before anything.
They went to court for that.
Yeah. No, the families are going to court. They're still in court for that.
Yeah.
For a lot of it, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But at least they've had a few victories. Like, they have regular income from back royalties owed and whatever.
Yeah,
interesting.
I mean, it's a small fraction.
But it's their family now. It's not them.
It's the estate.
How much of that $800 million that Batman v Superman like made? Do you think that they're getting?
Probably less than 1%.
So I mean, like it's something that like they first of all, they had to fight for credit. Then they had to fight for any kind of creative control,
right?
If they ever got it,
right?
But first, what they wanted was credit, and then they wanted their artwork back. And so, I mean, Jack Kirby is I think the quintessential case. I think Joe Simon wrote Captain America, and Simon and Schuster created Superman.
You mean Siegel and Schuster.
Siegel and Schuster.
There you go.
They created Superman, and none of these. The thing is that whether it's Marvel or DC, it's not unique to those publishers,
right?
Because they had a standard business model of the way that they treated their creators. I think that when you enjoy these comics, or the movies that are based on these comics, people should try to recognize what the creators that created them, and just maybe take a minute and understand that.
Next time you're out at Spider-Man, just picture Jack Kirby or Steve Ditko just dying in poverty.
I was going to say, happy birthday, Jack Kirby.
Yeah.
No, I'm not, Jack Kirby, he never complained. He did really well. Ditko, from everything that I understand.
Jack Kirby had a lot of stuff left in him. And not to demean anybody, but sometimes you just run out of ideas.
Hang on a second.
What if those were the best ideas of your life?
So wait a minute.
Ditko's still alive. He's 88.
So Jack Kirby, I take it, died kind of with a chip on his shoulder, I'm guessing, about the comic book business.
No, well,
did he? Todd just said he didn't complain.
He didn't. He
No. Didn't complain. But I'm saying I'm sure that he had a disdain for the business. I'm guessing.
Well, I mean, if you look at what Alan Moore's going through with his creation in DC Comics and Marvel Comics, like it's very similar to what Kirby went through from like the 70s to the 90s. And then on top of it, Kirby probably did 10,000 pages of artwork for the guy for Marvel. But he only had about 1,100 pages returned to him. And the thing that's really interesting is that not only did the publishers kind of steal that stuff from Kirby, but then because there was not a lot of market, there wasn't a lot of reverence for these characters in those days, the publishers would just give them to staffers.
There's contention about legally allowed to give it or...
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I say something? Can I say that every comic book store should have a Todd Bernardi?
Let me do you one better and tell you that every comic store probably has a Todd
Bernardi. They have several.
Come here, kid. Yeah. I'm going to tell you a story.
Jack Kirby. Come here, kid. Let me keep you from buying comics.
I'm absolutely not trying to tell people to buy comics, but if you care about comics,
sure,
don't buy it. I mean... And you love again.
I'm not trying to tell people not to buy comics, but if you love comics, don't buy them.
Shutter the comic stores. Show your love.
Hey, Todd.
What I'm trying to say is, don't buy superhero comics. We love comics.
Which is 90% of what's in here.
That's exactly
what you're about to tell Alika. That's no. a lot of business.
Here's what I'm saying.
I know you love superheroes, but don't buy superheroes.
No, here's
comics.
What you here's what
I read a superhero
all
comic,
I'm saying, all Todd is saying is that his next villain in his next comic is going to be called the Joy Sucker.
Yeah,
and
it's going to look like Stanley.
Yeah, it's going to look like Stanley.
He's going to
oh,
be
man.
Like,
he's like, what you got there? Like, I'm taking credit.
He's like, come here, true believer.
And he's got,
let
he's
me rip you off.
And he puts, down people and he that look like Steve Ditko and Jack Kirby. And he goes, Excelsior.
He's like, did you write this and draw this? I'm going to put my name on it. Excelsior. We're going to sell
he's never going to do an appearance at this concert.
That's right.
Thanks a lot, Todd.
Just Stanley. Know.
He
just
like,
know
if you stand.
Todd got out of there.
Well, Todd doesn't.
Just know once I publish this,
they got the cadaver from Weekend at Burbies to stand in for Stan Lee last year at Amazing Comic-Con.
Just know once I publish this podcast, it's over. Yeah. So just be aware.
Yeah,
I'm shaking my head. By the way,
all I can think about is Stan Lee coming down and giving Todd. Yeah,
look, I'm not saying don't enjoy superheroes if you love superheroes.
You're just saying don't buy them.
I know.
Yes, yeah, just don't buy them. You can enjoy them. Just
don't buy them. I'm not trying to get you, Bernardi. Hey, I'm not trying to do that. I'm not trying to bully people out of that. But trying to say like there's a difference between you know comic books. That are very artistic and well drawn, and great stories and great characters, and that
now he's
give
talking about the Kui Project.
No, no, but that's yes.
Todd, you are a comic.
Yes.
You are a comic
yes.
book artist.
Yeah.
Yes,
but yes. I'm saying, like, just you know, buy comics.
Well, what if someone was a fan of the genre and like they knew the history, they knew all of that, but they just really liked the comic.
That's
you
fine.
Still tell them, hey, you shouldn't buy those.
No. I'm totally trying to support people that want to buy comics in general, and I think that it's important for people to collect those comics if they want to have those collections. I absolutely understand.
Sure.
I'm the same way. I've got Batman comics. I'm not trying to talk people out of buying Batman. I've come in here and spent a ton of money on Batman.
You bought X-Men 92 last week.
Yeah, I bought
but he had a good reason.
I bought X-Men 92 because they got me where my feels with the flaming lips and the toadies. I was like, oh man, I love those 90s.
Here's the amazing thing
bands.
Is that we have a Comic-Con coming up November 5th and 6th, and I can't wait to do a live panel with Todd Bernardi.
Todd picketing the Comic-Con.
Oh, my goodness. Like, don't go in there. Guys.
I think that like most comic book fans are aware of this type of history, and they're also very supportive of the in other independent books like Saga and.
But you see, and that's the beauty of a con like the one that we're throwing in Lahaina, is that it's about the
very independent.
It's about the artists, you know. And before Hollywood decided to take over the San Diego Comic-Con, it was always about the artists. And it was about the creators and the writers.
Actually, San Diego is all about the comics.
That's what I'm saying. But
it was all the collectors and stuff in the lobby trading stuff back and forth.
Sure,
but those
collectors would go, "Oh, this is written by Neil Adams." Or,
well, the thing
"Oh,
is,
this
the
is by Jack Kirby."
At the point
Neil Adams is not a
was,
writer.
Well, what I'm saying is his name would be on the.
I'm glad you're watching.
Established from
you're
a very
that.
Early episode that G doesn't know.
No, but no, what I'm saying is that those names would come up and they would be on a comic book and they would go, okay, that's what I would pick up. Mm-hmm. You know, they those names would mean something.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about. So you know, and those happened at cons, and like I said, San Diego became such a huge like pop culture phenomenon. You know, and in some respects that's a good thing, and in some respects that's not a good thing.
I was just joking about not buying superhero comics. I'm not really that.
Well,
despicable.
I was going to shove it down your throat and be like, "Well, Invincible's a superhero comic,
yeah,
or Jupiter Circle, or Legacy is a superhero comic, or Planetary is a superhero comic."
Right, and they're all independent, and they're all and all the creators that writing and drawing that are getting most of that money.
And that's why I'm saying, why would you tell people not to buy that jerk?
I'm not saying that. That I told
I
people.
No
I said come
here tomorrow. I know what
I didn't say not to buy superhero comics. I said not to buy Marvel or DC.
Wait,
what about all the? What about all? What about all the great, promising writers and artists who are working on at Marvel and DC? Who you know. Yeah. Don't they deserve some support?
All I'm hearing is the guy who buys Batman comics.
It's not just the evil money grubbers at the top. You know, it's the whole company.
Hey, I agree with that. And you point out a wonderful artist that's working for Marvel and DC, and I'll say that they should get support.
Wow, you are just so hardcore about this. Jeez Louise.
No, I mean,
you know many.
Yeah, I know.
Jeez. There just seems to be no give with you.
I'm glad you didn't open your mouth during Joe Rubenstein's interview, because he would have ripped you a new one.
I wish he had done that. I really have wanted to hear that.
Well, no. Joe Rubenstein knew Kirby. Like, he knew those guys.
Right.
And he knows what happens at Marvel and DC. And he understands.
Sure, but he wouldn't be like with them forever. He's
no,
not
no,
like
but
outside picketing.
But the trade off is like, do you want to draw superhero comics, or do you want to work in obscurity? And I think that there's a difference. But I don't think that
we all know what choice you made, Todd.
I know, that's what I'm saying. But and that's what I'm saying. But if you look at the underground comics, like R. Crumb decided to work in obscurity and still made a name for himself.
Okay, you know what? And to that, can I say something about that? And to his
who's R. Crumb?
And to
Robert Crumb.
Robert Crumb, Felix the Cat.
For not Felix the Cat.
Sorry,
Fritz the Cat.
Fritz.
Oh. Made more popular by the animator Ralph Bakshi.
Okay. There's
contention between who owns the rights and
not just
Robert
that.
Crumb kind of backed out of it.
Not just that. Crumb did not like.
That's what I just said.
Crumb's take. Crumb did not like Bakshi's take on. Yeah. On his comic.
Because he took more liberties than Crumb was comfortable with.
And, right. I think another good example of only new Bakshi's.
You can actually watch Bakshi's version on YouTube right now of Felix the Cat. I was going to say it again. Fritz the Cat, thank you.
But I think Mouse by Spiegelman is also another good example of somebody that was underground that decided not to do superheroes but wanted to do comic books and ended up deciding to be more obscure and then self-publishing, but then that guy won a Pulitzer.
I never finished Mouse, but Mouse was actually I read a couple of issues of that. That was quite compelling. I never got to finish it though.
It won a Pulitzer.
Who was that?
Just watch
Art Spiegelman.
Spiegelman. Yeah.
Just watch American Tail.
Is that the same story?
No.
It's not.
But I see. I mean, that's like saying, just watch Mickey
Let's
Mouse.
Let's put it this way. The
Air Pirate Funnies.
Yeah. Well, Air Pirate Funnies was...
Is a direct...
The American Tail Mice would be...
It was basically pushing the copyright law.
Let's put it this way. The American Tail Mice would be oppressed by the ones in Mouse. Let's put it that way.
Well, they'd be cats.
Correct. Yeah.
No, they would be dogs.
Because in
American Tail, they were a representation of the Jews. And Mouse has to deal with
Not so much Jews in American Tail. It's like just immigrants.
Immigrants from Eastern Europe and stuff. But there's a very Jewish.
Gotcha.
There's a very
well. No, it was more like a gypsy feel because it was
gypsy,
Eastern
almost.
European
yeah.
In
well,
Tail.
Nazis didn't like them either.
Well, yeah. And so
you got a point there.
Same,
you would know.
Mouse
you would
talk
know.
About Mouse is about fascism, totalitarianism, and things of that nature. So yeah.
But it doesn't actually have mice.
It does.
Oh, it does.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's like American Tail, then.
Yes.
We'll go with yes for now.
Okay, for now.
Is there a boat?
There's Typhus.
There...
Oh.
The boat?
Yeah.
No. You mean the disease?
Yeah, the
disease. Okay, gotcha.
No,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Sorry.
It's okay. So anyway, you've managed... Todd,
I've managed to run off.
You've managed to run off Gannon and Alika tonight
by my diatribe.
But
this is more piloty than the pilot.
Yeah. Can I say this? Yeah. You can actually pick up Todd Bernardi's comic books here at Maui Comics and Collectibles.
No, don't buy it.
At 333.
You're the guy that always sells
Dairy Road in Kahului, the Kukui Project. Of course, you can get. Hard Candy Aftermath, and he's also working on the latest issue of Disco Thunder Groovebone.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, there's a lot of people waiting on some eights.
Some eights?
Yeah.
They're going to come in from the printer. And
did you say there's a lot of people waiting on some eights?
Eights.
Yeah.
Eights.
Yeah.
Apparently, people have been picking up the whole run of Kukui project.
Wow. Bernardi. Good stuff, man.
Yeah.
You know, before it was four, now it's eight.
Yeah. I give good oral.
You know, when you guys were talking about the whole...
I eat it, then I ate
like,
it.
Like, creators getting content and whatnot.
Yeah.
Over the weekend, I was talking to DJ, and he told me that he actually worked for a company where he created hundreds and hundreds of characters for a company that he worked for free because he was stupid. And, yeah, I don't know.
As
I don't
in
know
DJ,
why that,
as in DJ Calvicani,
yeah.
The Big Island
the only
comic
DJ
book publisher.
We know.
No, I'm just clarifying for the people that are listening so that they...
Oh, okay.
Yes,
people
yes.
listen to this?
Yeah.
No one listens to this.
He's the publisher of Exilion, and he did that, did he? That's interesting.
Yeah. He was telling me, because we're kind of rapping about character creations and mm-hmm. whatnot.
Crazy.
And he said that he pretty much did that. And when he was starting out, he created hundreds and hundreds of characters. He
Kirby'd himself.
And...
That should be... That's the name of the show.
He didn't have...
Kirby'd himself.
I guess creative control. Like, after he created
like
them, the
American
company
history.
Took them over, and...
That's
I was
crazy.
Like, wow.
Did he...
He didn't give me any names.
Oh, okay. I was kind
of
curious.
Characters
I didn't
want to
get
company.
Anybody in trouble or nothing. I was just
right,
kind of
right.
curious. Interesting.
Thanks, DC.
Well, Mr. Kiavikane still, will he still be in Maui next month?
He's coming.
I know he's not coming to the con, though.
He's not coming to the con, but he wants to, we're going to do a recording with him. And
he's
going to
be protesting outside with Todd.
Don't buy superhero comics, guys.
We're going to be at Amazing Hawaii Comic Con Special Edition. We're splitting a table there.
Cool.
And then he's not going to be able to make it to Maui Con, unfortunately. He will be, however, probably appearing this weekend at Hawaii Con.
Oh, very cool. You know who's going to be at Hawaii Con, by the way?
This weekend?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's not this weekend, maybe weekend after next.
It's very Star Trek centric. Like, Walter Koenig is going to be there. Nichelle Nichols is going to be there.
I met Walter Koenig.
Did you?
Great.
Yeah,
he hung out and
talked
like story for like 45 minutes.
Yeah, I heard he's a really
Eugene
cool cat.
Gene Roddenberry?
Is he? He's going to Hawaii? Yeah, he's going to be at the Hawaii Con?
He lives in Maui.
No, I met him last
year. Eugene Roddenberry lives. I did not know that. Wow, crazy.
Yeah, everybody knows that.
He bought a copy of the Kukui Project, and I was hanging out with another artist in Artist Alley, and so Nadia sold it to him.
How long before you take it to return it? No, I'm just kidding.
You know, I'm working on one of his homes here on Maui. And,
can you
say
that?
Looking at the floor plan, and...
He's trying to build his own enterprise.
No, the floor plan is in the shape of the Starfleet. I'm
Shut
like.
Up. Is there a captain's chair?
That's awesome.
Well, I don't have... You know,
don't
every time you walk in the room, it's like...
I just
dun, dun,
I
dun,
see
dun.
It from the top view, and yeah. It's the Starfleet I'm alone.
Don't be
like,
divulging
cool.
this kind of information without any...
I'm sure
so
he's
proud
cool.
of it.
Yeah, good. Well, listen...
I'm sure he's happy up country with Chris Christopherson and Oprah.
Yeah. Listen, now that Todd's gone, we can get the show. Oh, jeez. He's back.
Hey, welcome back, Todd. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
So out of 2 minutes of picketing, how many people did you
see? No, anyway, listen. Very interesting conversation.
He just stands up the store and goes, it's closed. Go away.
I don't have to do that. He goes on bathroom
break. Listen. I really want everybody to know that Todd is expressing another interesting side of comic books that we don't very rarely
oppression.
That we rarely ever talk about, and it's important to bring up.
Yeah, the obscurest D-bag angle.
I'm not trying to be like that, but
I'm
that's
trying to help
just,
you out, Todd.
Thanks. I'm just trying to say like
that. I'm not trying to be like that, but it just comes natural, and I can't help myself.
I'm not saying that what Marvel and DC is not doing, that what they're doing right now, isn't good. I'm not saying that you guys shouldn't be a fan of it, but just look a little deeper. Is all
interesting.
I'm saying.
Now,
I'm just saying, like, I'm not saying don't buy
the cover.
If they're not reading, if they don't have underwear on the outside, I'm not opening that book.
Well, I know how you feel about the costumes.
Can we all agree with this? Now that Disney owns Marvel, Marvel is actually getting a taste of its own medicine, don't you think?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that's a good thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
also limited format.
Well, now everything Marvel does has to be run through Disney Corporate, and that can be. And from what I understand, Disney Corporate is very stringent on the content that comes out of their studio or their art department.
But is it the same? Like, they're all making money, right?
Is it
just Disney making money and Marvel's like, hey, but we made this stuff?
Well, I can guarantee you that there are people that are artists at Disney that are working on Disney projects that created some of these characters that probably don't get credit for them. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming
that's all of them. Somebody created each and every one of their characters.
Right.
But I'm sure that there are some that are not getting proper due credit, and I'm saying that now Marvel is getting a taste of its own medicine because now
just like
they
the
are.
was it Walter Lansing who worked with Mickey or Walt Disney? One of those famous animators.
Isn't Lansing the guy who created Woody Woodpecker?
Yeah, but they're all around the same era. I'm trying to think that there was a famous animator that Disney screwed out of.
I can tell you one of them, or one that left, Don Bluth.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's later. That's later, though.
Yeah.
I'm talking about in the golden age, like the 30s and 40s.
Interesting. Well, listen. Todd's gone. Rejoice, because we can buy comics here at Maui Comics and Collectibles. 333 Dairy Road in Kahului. Superhero or other. It doesn't matter. We do not...
Underwear on the outside.
That's right. We do not discriminate against superhero comic books, because he has them all here. Independent and mass market, and they're all here at 333 Dairy Road in Kahului, Maui Comics and Collectibles. And more information, thank you, sir, more information on the Maui Comic Con coming up November 5th and 6th. We've already, I should say, the one, Alika has already confirmed Mr. Lealoha coming to the con as well. Any new announcements as well?
We're going to have some big ones coming up pretty soon.
Interesting.
But just suffice it to say that James Silvani, the artist from Darkwing Duck,
of course,
is going to have some company.
I noticed you put up a page on Facebook as well, an event page.
We're slowly filling it. Bear with us. We're just working out all the details how we want to present it, but we're slowly filling it up. So thanks everybody for being passionate about it.
Lots of interest already.
Of course, yeah.
Which is very cool.
Comics have always been a big thing on Maui. So
yeah. For sure.
I think it's more of just trying to get everybody down in the same day.
I am just excited to see what Ganon's going to be dressed up as when he goes. I wonder what he's cosplaying.
You.
You're going to cosplay as me?
Yeah.
You're doing a good job already, minus the tattoos.
I know.
You're good. Anyway, listen, folks. Nerdwatch presents Bernardi's Mail Sack, or Nerdwatch Nights, or Nerdwatch Men.
We need a new title.
Oh, Nerdwatch Men has come to an end.
Hey.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, for every reboot, maybe go out and see Native Sons by Mark Gould, or Pineapple Man by Sam Campos. Or,
I could have swore I was ending the show.
Or Exilion by DJ Kiyabikane.
He saw a microphone, picked it up, and just decided to...
I'm just saying, for every...
But I'm not going to interrupt him, because these are actually good guys he's mentioning.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, for every all new X-Men number one,
mm-hmm.
go check out a local Hawaii comic book artist.
Mm-hmm. It's gonna be hard for the guys in the mainland to listen to this.
We ship.
Tons of guys.
Yeah, contact the store if you guys are interested in getting local comics.
Yeah,
and there's tons of local guys. You go.
I don't know how it works, but apparently it works. Yeah.
If you go into your local comic book shop. A lot of local comic book shops support their local comic book creators in that city, and there's lots of people out there that are worth checking out.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Let's not discourage supporting local comic book stores by picking up local comic books at your local comic book store, wherever that may be.
Is there such a thing as like an indie con where it's only independent artists?
There's one called
comic creators.
There's one called Staple in Austin. There's one in Maryland. There's one. They're all over the place. There was one called Alternative Press Expo that was in San Francisco, but now I think it's moved back to San Jose. So there's almost one in every coast, and also in the middle of America too. So
But at least we all know one thing now. After tonight's little episode, we all know why when we ever see Todd at a con, he's always moping at his table.
I'm always very happy. I love comic book conventions.
Yeah,
I love
at Amazing Con, you're happy to sell a Civil War blanket.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I didn't sell that Civil War blend at Amazing. I sold it at Comic-Con Honolulu.
Oh.
And
big difference.
Well, no, it says you look so happy trying to sell it.
I was like,
you want this Civil War thing I did as a little sketch on?
It's really funny. I got a lot of people looking at that, and I was like, why are you guys looking at that? That's not that.
The sad part is most people walked up to the table because
it was such a good rendition.
No, they didn't. A lot of people came up to talk to me about my actual character.
Well, listen, you've created quite a few characters, sir, and you can all check them out here at Maui Comics and Collectibles. Well, listen, Gannon. Go ahead.
I love you, Alika.
Lies. We can bro hug it out.
Yeah,
after
we can bro down after this.
You need me, but you just
yeah.
You're chopping me down, man.
So we're out of time, ladies and gentlemen and nerds. Nerdwatch Nights has come to an end. Nerdwatch Men has also come to an end. Whatever we want to call it. You decide. Hit us up on Facebook.com/TheNerdWatch. Hit us up on Instagram.
Magnum.
@_NerdWatch. Hit us up on Twitter at Nerdwatch Nation. We're trying to... we're also trying to...
make a show. We're trying to
we're also trying something
that sticks.
Yeah, we're trying to work out an issue with YouTube, which will be taken care of. You can also see us on YouTube as well at Nerdwatch Nation too. So
we should just keep posting. Yeah. None of our stuff got demonetized because we never monetized
anything
in the
first place. So Gannon, thanks for joining us tonight.
Magnum,
and I hope you're ready for part one of the show coming up next.
Part one.
Wait, we're recording?
So
that camera's not set up.
That's right. So for Gannon and for the one and only Format.
Yo.
The one and only Alika.
Magnum.
Swan, the comic book henchman. And for the man who made me realize, who's like brought me back down to reality about comic books, Todd Bernardi. And creators, all creators of comic books should be appreciated.
Yeah, maybe next week you can ruin ice cream for us.
It's got a preservative in it that makes that causes cancer and diabetes.
Yeah, I was joking.
Your realities are really ruining other people's fantasies, which is really bad. So until next week for Nerdwatch Men, peace out, much love, and most assuredly. Always stay nerdy.
Why do I like you?
You don't.
How does this work?
And until next week, we say to you, aloha. We're out of time. See you guys.
Aloha. That's right. Magnum.
Wet koala.